Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vishishyate Ishavasyam Idam Sarvam Yatkincha Jagatyam Jagat Tena Tyaktena Punjita Magridaha Kashasvidhanam Kurvaneve Hakarmani Chijiva Shet Chatam Samaha Evam Twayi Nanyate Tosti Nakarma Lipyate Nare Asurya Namate Loka Antena Tamasavritaha Tangste Pretya Bigachanti Yeke Chatmahano Janaha Anejare Kam Manaso Javiyo Naina Deva Apnuvan Purvam Arshat Tadhavato Nyan Atyeti Tishtat Tasminapo Matarishvadhatati Tadejati Tannaijati Tadude Tadvantike Tadantarasya Sarvasya Tadu Sarvasyasya Bhayataha Yastu Sarvani Bhutani Atmanyevanupashyati Sarvabhute Shuchatmanam Tato Navijagupsate Yasmin Sarvani Bhutani Atmayavabhud Vijanataha Tatrako Mohakashoka Ekatvam Anupashyataha Saparyagach Chukram Akayam Avranam Asnaviram Shudhamapapavidham Kavir Manishi Paribhu Swayambhur Yatatat Yatortan Vyadatach Chashvati Vyasamavyaha Antam Tamaha Pravishanti Ye Vidyam Upasate Tato Bhuya Ivate Tamo Yau Vidyayang Rataha Anyadeva Hurvidyaya Anyadahuravidyaya Iti Shushumadhiranam Yenastad Vichachakshide Vidyancha Vidyancha Yas Tadvedo Bhayam Saha Avidyaya Mrityum Tirtva Vidyaya Mritamashnute Antang Tamaha Pravishanti Ye Sambhutim Upasate Tato Bhuya Ivate Tamo Yau Sambhutyam Rataha Anyadevahu Sambhavad Anyadahur Asambhavad Iti Shru Shushmadhiranam Yenastad Vichachakshire Sambhutim Cha Vinasham Cha Yastad Vedo Bhayam Saha Vinashena Mrityum Tirtva Sambhutyam Ratam Ashnute Hiranmayena Patrena Satyasya Pihitam Mukham Tatvam Pushana Pavranu Satyadharmaya Drishtaye Pushane Karshe Yamasurya Prajapatya Vyuha Rasmin Samuha Tejo Yate Rupam Kalyanatamam Tate Pashami Yosavaso Purushaha Soamasmi Vayuranilam Amritam Atedam Basmantam Shadiram Om Kratosmara Kratam Smara Kratosmara Kratam Smara Agne Naya Supataraya Asman Bishvani Deva Vayunani Vidvan Yuryodhya Smaj Juhurana Meno Puyashtam Te Namo Uktim Vidhema. English. Everyone takes a verse, is that what you do?
Normally we do it in unison.
Unison.
Observing all commas.
Observing all commas. The personality of Godhead is perfect and complete, and because he is completely perfect, all emanations from him, such as this phenomenal world, are perfectly equipped as complete wholes. Whatever is produced of the complete whole is also complete in itself. because he is the complete whole, even though so many complete units emanate from him, he remains the complete balance. Everything animate or inanimate that is within the universe is controlled and owned by the Lord. One should therefore accept only those things necessary for himself, which are set aside as his quota, and one should not accept other things, knowing well to whom they belong. One may aspire to live for hundreds of years if he continuously goes on working in that way, for that sort of work will not bind him to the law of karma. There is no alternative to this way for man. Whoever he may be must enter into the planets known as the worlds of the faithless, full of darkness and ignorance. Although fixed in his abode, the personality of Godhead is swifter than the mind and can overcome all others running. Powerful demigods cannot approach him. Although in one place, he controls those who supply the air and rain. He surpasses all in excellence. The Supreme Lord walks and does not walk. He is far away, but he is very near as well. He is within everything, and yet he is outside of everything. He who sees everything in relation to the Supreme Lord, who sees all living entities as his parts and parcels, and who sees the Supreme Lord within everything, never hates anything or any being. One who always sees all living entities as spiritual sparks, in quality one with the Lord, becomes a true knower of things. What then can be illusion or anxiety for him? Such a person must factually know the greatest of all, the personality of Godhead, who is embodied, unembodied, omniscient, beyond reproach, without veins, pure and uncontaminated, the self-sufficient philosopher who has been fulfilling everyone's desire since time immemorial. Those who engage in the culture of nescient activities shall enter into the darkest region of ignorance. Worse still are those engaged in the culture of so-called knowledge. The wise have explained that one result is derived from the culture of knowledge and that a different result is obtained from the culture of nescience. Only one who can learn the process of nescience and that of transcendental knowledge side by side can transcend the influence of repeated birth and death and enjoy the full blessings of immortality. Those who are engaged in the worship of demigods enter into the darkest region of ignorance, and still more so to the worshippers of the impersonal absolute. One result is obtained by worshipping the supreme cause of all causes, and that another result is obtained by worshipping what is not supreme. All this is heard from the undisturbed authorities who clearly explained it. One should know perfectly the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, and his transcendental name, form, qualities, and pastimes, as well as the temporary material creation with its temporary demigods, men, and animals. When one knows these, he surpasses death and the ephemeral cosmic manifestation with it, and in the eternal kingdom of God, he enjoys his eternal life of bliss and knowledge. O my Lord, sustainer of all that lives, your real face is covered by your dazzling effulgence. Kindly remove that covering and exhibit yourself to your pure devotee. O my Lord, O primeval philosopher, maintainer of the universe, O regulating principle, destination of the pure devotees, well-wisher of the progenitors of mankind, please remove the effulgence of your transcendental rays so that I can see your form of bliss. You are the eternal supreme personality of Godhead, like unto the sun, as am I. Let this temporary body be burnt to ashes, and let the air of life be merged with the totality of air. Now, O my Lord, please remember all my sacrifices, and because you are the ultimate beneficiary, please remember all that I have done for you. O my Lord, as powerful as fire, O omnipotent one, now I offer you all obeisances, falling on the ground at your feet. O my Lord, please lead me on the right path to reach you. And since you know all that I have done in the past, please free me from the reactions to my past sins, so that there will be no hindrance to my progress. Okay. Book open to mantra 12. Hare Krishna. Andhang tamaha pravishanti ye sambhutim upasate tato bhuya iva te tamo yau sambhutyang rataha. Translation purport, word for word. What's the drill?
As you know.
What do you usually do?
I'm unpredictable.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Antam, ignorance. Tamaha, darkness. Pravishanti, enter into. Yea, those who. Asambhutim, demigods. Upasate, worship. Tataha, then that. Puyaha, still more. Eva, like that. Te, those. Tamaha, darkness. Ye, who. U, also. Samputyam, in the absolute. Rataha, engaged. Those who are engaged in the worship of demigods enter into the darkest region of ignorance, and still more so, to the worshippers of the impersonal absolute. Let's see what we're going to do with this.
Yeah.
You have one?
Yes, we do.
Oh, they're so good. Just what the doctor ordered, literally. Zafu's for all. That's how we get elected, huh? Thank you very much. Wow. Excuse me? Now we have to readjust the mic? Yeah. That should be good enough. I think so. We won't hazard more. Those who are engaged in the worship of demigods enter into the darkest region of ignorance, and still more so do the worshippers of the impersonal absolute. Purport, the Sanskrit word asambhuti refers to those who have no independent existence. Sambhuti is the absolute personality of Godhead, who is absolutely independent of everything. In the Bhagavad Gita 10.2, the absolute personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, states, Name vidu suragana prabhavamna maharshayaha aham adir hidevanam Maharshi Nam Trasarvashaha. Neither the hosts of demigods nor the great sages know my origin or opulences, for in every respect I am the source of the demigods and sages. Thus, Krishna is the origin of the powers delegated to demigods, great sages, and mystics. Although they are endowed with great powers, these powers are limited, and thus it is very difficult for them to know how Krishna himself appears by his own internal potency in the form of a man. Many philosophers and great rishis or mystics try to distinguish the absolute from the relative by their tiny brain power. This can only help them reach the negative conception of the absolute, without realizing any positive trace of the absolute. Definition of the absolute by negation is not complete. Such negative definitions lead one to create a concept of one's own. Thus one imagines that the absolute must be formless and without qualities. Such negative qualities are simply the reversals of relative material qualities and are therefore also relative. By conceiving of the Absolute in this way, one can at the utmost reach the impersonal effulgence of God, known as Brahma, but one cannot make further progress to Bhagavan, the personality of Godhead. Such mental speculators do not know that the Absolute Personality of Godhead is Krishna, that the impersonal Brahma is the glaring effulgence of his transcendental body, or that the Paramatma, the Supersoul, is his all-pervading plenary representation. Nor do they know that Krishna has his eternal form with its transcendental qualities of eternal bliss and knowledge. The dependent demigods and great sages imperfectly consider him to be a powerful demigod, and they consider the Brahma effulgence to be the absolute truth. But the devotees of Krishna, by dint of their surrendering unto him and their unalloyed devotion, can know that he is the absolute person and that everything emanates from him. Such devotees continuously render loving service unto Krishna, the fountainhead of everything. In the Bhagavad Gita 7:20-23, it is said that only unintelligent, bewildered persons, driven by a strong desire for sense gratification, worship the demigods for the temporary relief of temporary problems. Since the living being is materially entangled, he has to be relieved from material bondage entirely to attain permanent relief on the spiritual plane, where eternal bliss, life, and knowledge exist. Sri Ishopanishad therefore instructs that we should not seek temporary relief of our difficulties by worshipping the dependent demigods, who can bestow only temporary benefit. Rather, we must worship the Absolute Personality of Godhead, Krishna, who is all attractive and who can bestow upon us complete freedom from material bondage by taking us back home, back to Godhead. It is stated in the Bhagavad Gita 7:23 that the worshippers of the demigods can go to the planets of the demigods. The moon worshippers can go to the moon, the sun worshippers to the sun, etc. Modern scientists are now venturing to the moon with the help of rockets. But this is not really a new attempt. With their advanced consciousness, human beings are naturally inclined to travel in outer space and to reach other planets either by spaceships, mystic powers, or demigod worship. In the Vedic scriptures, it is said that one can reach other planets by any one of these three ways. But the most common way is by worshipping the demigod presiding over a particular planet. In this way, one can reach the moon planet, the sun planet, and even Brahmaloka, the topmost planet in this universe. However, all planets in the material universe are temporary residences. The only permanent planets are the Vaikuntha Lokas. These are found in the spiritual sky, where the personality of Godhead himself predominates. As Lord Krishna states in the Bhagavad Gita, Abrahma Bhuvana Loka Punar Avartinorjana Mam Upecha Tukonteya Punar Janma Navidyate. From the highest planet in the material world down to the lowest, all are places of misery wherein repeated birth and death take place. But one who attains my abode, O son of Kunti, never takes birth again. Sri Ishopanishad points out that one who worships the demigods and attains to their material planets still remains in the darkest region of the universe. The whole universe is covered by the gigantic material elements. It is just like a coconut covered by a shell and half filled with water. Since its covering is airtight, the darkness within is dense, and therefore the sun and the moon are required for illumination. Outside the universe is the vast and unlimited Brahmajyoti expansion, which is filled with Vaikuntha Lokas. The biggest and highest planet in the Brahmajyoti is Krishna Loka, or Goloka Vrindavan, where the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna himself, resides. Lord Sri Krishna never leaves Krishna Loka, although he dwells there with his eternal associates. He is omnipresent throughout the complete material and spiritual cosmic manifestations. This fact has already been explained in Mantra 4. The Lord is present everywhere, just like the sun, yet he is situated in one place, just as the sun is situated in its own undeviating orbit. The problems of life cannot be solved simply by going to the moon planet or to some other planet above or below it. Therefore, Sri Isha Upanishad advises us not to bother with any destination within this dark material universe, but to try to get out of it and reach the effulgent kingdom of God. There are many pseudo-worshippers who become religionists only for the sake of name and fame. Such pseudo-religionists do not wish to get out of this universe and reach the spiritual sky. They only want to maintain the status quo in the material world under the garb of worshiping the Lord. The atheists and impersonalists lead such foolish pseudo-religionists into the darkest region by preaching the cult of atheism. The atheist directly denies the existence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the impersonalists support the atheists by stressing the impersonal aspect of the Supreme Lord. Thus far, we have not come across any mantra in Sri Isha Upanishad in which the Supreme Personality of Godhead is denied. It is said that he can run faster than anyone. Those who are running after other planets are certainly persons, and if the Lord can run faster than all of them, how can he be impersonal? The impersonal conception of the Supreme Lord is another form of ignorance arising from an imperfect conception of the Absolute Truth. The ignorant pseudo-religionists and the manufacturers of so-called incarnations. Who directly violate the Vedic injunctions are liable to enter into the darkest region of the universe because they mislead those who follow them. These impersonalists generally pose themselves as incarnations of God to foolish persons who have no knowledge of Vedic wisdom. If such foolish men have any knowledge at all, it is more dangerous in their hands than ignorance itself. Such impersonalists do not even worship the demigods according to the scriptural recommendations. In the scriptures, there are recommendations for worshiping demigods under certain circumstances. But at the same time, these scriptures state that there's normally no need for this. In the Bhagavad Gita 7:23, it is clearly stated that the results derived from worshiping the demigods are not permanent. Since the entire material universe is impermanent, whatever is achieved within the darkness of material existence is also impermanent. The question is how to obtain real and permanent life. The Lord states that as soon as one reaches him by devotional service, which is the one and only way to approach the Personality of Godhead, one attains complete freedom from the bondage of birth and death. In other words, the path of salvation from the material clutches fully depends on the principles of knowledge and detachment gained from serving the Lord. The pseudo-religionists have neither knowledge nor detachment from material affairs, for most of them want to live in the golden shackles of material bondage, under the shadow of philanthropic activities disguised as religious principles. by a false display of religious sentiments, they present a show of devotional service while indulging in all sorts of immoral activities. In this way, they pass as spiritual masters and devotees of God. Such violators of religious principles have no respect for the authoritative acharyas, the holy teachers in the strict disciplic succession. They ignore the Vedic injunction, acharyopasana, one must worship the acharya, and Krishna's statement in the Bhagavad Gita, evam parampara praptam, this supreme science of God is received through the disciplic succession. Instead, to mislead the people in general, they themselves become so-called acharyas, but they do not even follow the principles of the acharyas. These rogues are the most dangerous elements in human society. Because there's no religious government, they escape punishment by the laws of the state. They cannot, however, escape the law of the Supreme, who has clearly declared in the Bhagavad Gita that envious demons in the garb of religious propagandists shall be thrown into the darkest regions of hell. Bhagavad Gita 16:19-20. Sri Ishopanishad confirms that these pseudo-religionists are heading toward the most obnoxious place in the universe after the completion of their spiritual master business, which they conduct simply for sense gratification. So, we say something, we go into Bhagavad Gita, what do we do?
We'd be deeply appreciative if you'd say something.
Okay. Of course, there's a lot of territory that Prabhupada covers in this verse. Prabhupada's more or less at odds with everyone. The so-called Sanatana Dharma community, there's a sort of tacit agreement that everybody's good and that whatever you do is good and that no one should break the agreement by criticizing any other path. But Krishna never signed on to this agreement. In the Bhagavad Gita, Namam Dushkritana Mudha Prabhadyante Naradhama Maya Pratigana Hasura Pavamashrita. Those who don't surrender to me are Naradhamas, lowest of mankind. They're miscreants. Their knowledge has been stolen by illusion. They're of the atheistic nature of demons. And they're gross fools, Mudhas. So Krishna expresses he's judgmental. He has value judgments to make. And Srila Prabhupada follows the same value judgments. He doesn't accept that, yes, you worship Shiva, you worship Krishna, you worship Durga, you worship Ganesh, you worship yourself, you worship whatever you worship, it all leads to the same place, it's all good. He doesn't accept the path of philanthropic nice guy activities. The general view is that if you support your community, you help with the hospitals and the old age homes and the feeding the poor, then you're really religious. And Prabhupada dismisses that. He had some really good language for it. Some really nice language. I forget exactly where it is. Oh, well, of course, you look in text 11, you're not going to find it. You have to look in text 12. The pseudo-religionists have neither knowledge nor detachment from material affairs. Most of them want to live in the golden shackles of material bondage under the shadow of philanthropic activities disguised as religious principles. That's Prabhupada's take on philanthropic activities, not that, oh, very good, you're feeding the poor, you're helping the orphans. This is very religious. Prabhupada said this is not religion at all. These are the activities, the golden shackles of material bondage. Maybe there's iron shackles in the form of ignorance, and these are golden shackles in the form of goodness. But in any case, shackles are shackles. So Prabhupada parts company with those who want to say that if you're doing pious activities, well, that's religion. Then if you're helping your fellow man, well, then that's religion. Prabhupada says, no. That's not it either. And then there are those who say, yes, it's not philanthropic activities, it's not worshiping the demigods. These are all lower activities. The real thing is to worship the Absolute, who has no form, no qualities, no activities, no name, who can't be understood other than as being an impersonal, all-pervading, homogeneous truth. And Prabhupada rejects that also as being an envious approach, as being uninformed or ignorant, being simply the flip side of Maya instead of the material qualities, which we know are relative. We have no qualities, which are a rejection of qualities and therefore relative to qualities also. Not qualities. So again, it's relative. The absolute truth can't be imagined by speculation. We have to understand the absolute from the absolute or from the representatives of the absolute to be the personality of Godhead, Krishna. So Prabhupada's at war with everything other than surrender to the personality of Godhead. Everything else is rejected.
Is that okay?
Better than okay.
Can I ask a question?
This verse in Ishopanishad, it's pretty heavy on the impersonalists, saying they're going to the darkest regions. So in the 12th chapter, Arjuna asks Krishna, which is better, those who worship his personal form or those who take the impersonal route? And Krishna seems to be a little lighter on the impersonalists than that. He says that their route is very, very difficult and it's not recommended, but ultimately they attain to me.
Yeah, ultimately. Bahunam janmanamante, after many, many births. He's a little light on them there. Elsewhere he says, avyaktim vyaktim apannam manyante mam buddhaya. Those who are ignorant think that I've come from some higher impersonal truth. Avajananti mam mudha manushim tanamashvata. The gross fools think that I've accepted a material body from, you know, saguna brahma, so brahma qualified by material attributes. The gross fools think that. So he can be nice to them in the 12th chapter because he's going to smash them elsewhere. Kaivalyam narakayate. Prabodhananda Saraswati has said that it's worse. The worst hellish condition is to be merged in the absolute truth, where there's no opportunity for service and individual exchanges. Is that okay? Something else? Next instruction.
Let's read something from the Bhagavad Gita.
Is that also whichever something, or is that on a schedule? We start 10.
Anything in the first 9 chapters? Fifth chapter is nice, okay. We've just posted, by the way, for those who are interested in editorial affairs, fifth chapter of Bhagavad Gita on the BBT edit site.
You know what? Excuse me, I'm sorry, but I went across that today, but I couldn't download the fifth chapter. The other chapters would download.
Huh.
That fifth chapter was just stuck and stuck and stuck.
Stuck and stuck and stuck.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll check it out. Oh, it should be fixed. If it's not working now, we should fix it within the next day or so. Yeah. It shouldn't take weeks. Wow.
What were you referring to on
bbtedit.com, we're posting the first edition of Bhagavad Gita with all the editing done for the second edition and with comments and with images from Prabhupada's manuscript. So the first 5 chapters, at least the first 4, and the introduction are all online. So the fifth one just went up. We'll have to check it out for technical problems. It started.
Even just my computer, I'm not sure.
We'll find out. Thank you for letting me know. I can also leave a copy of it on the computer here so that you can just get it that way. But I'll find out what's going on. Anyway, the fifth chapter is a good chapter. It's been certified. And where shall we look in the fifth chapter? Kartritvam nakarmani lokasya srijati prabhu. Okay. 256. That is to say, the next page from where I am. Nakartritvam nakarmani lokasya srijati prabhu nakarma palasam yogam sabhavastu pravartate. We'll read the word for word, just never. Kartritvam, proprietorship. Nor. Karmani, activities. Lokasya, of the people. Srijati, creates. Prabhu, the master of the city of the body. Nor. Karmapala, with the results of activities. Sangyogam, connection. Sabhavaha, the modes of material nature.
But.
Pravartate,
act.
Should we read the verse? You all chant the verse. I skipped over it. Let's give it a shot. Nakartritvam nakarmani lokasya srijati prabhu nakarma palasangyogam sabhavastu pravartate.
Nakartritvam nakarmani
lokasya srijati prabhu
karma palasam yogam
nakarma palasam yogam svabhavastu pravartate nakartritvam nakarmani lokasya srijati prabhu nakarma palasam yogam svabhavastu pravartate nakartritvam nakarmani lokasya srijati prabhu nakarma palasangyogam svabhavastu pravartate.
Nakartritvam nakarmani. Lokasya srijati prabhu. Nakarma palasang yogam. Svabhavastu pravartate. Nakartritvam nakarmani. Lokasya srijati prabhu. Na karma palasang yogam. Svabhavas tu pravartate. Na kartrityam na karmani. Lokasya srijati prabhu. Na karma palasang yogam. Svabhavas tu pravartate. The unembodied spirit, master of the city of the body.
You said unembodied.
Sorry, I said unembodied, I did. The embodied spirit, master of the city of his body, does not create activities, nor does he induce people to act, nor does he create the fruits of action. All this is enacted by the modes of material nature. Purport, the living entity, as will be explained in the seventh chapter, is one of the energies or natures of the Supreme Lord, but is distinct from matter, which is another nature called inferior of the Lord. Somehow the superior nature, the living entity, has been in contact with material nature since time immemorial. The temporary body or material dwelling place which he obtains is the cause of varieties of activities and their resultant reactions. Living in such a conditional atmosphere, one suffers the results of the activities of the body by identifying himself in ignorance with the body. It is ignorance acquired from time immemorial that is the cause of bodily suffering and distress. As soon as the living entity becomes aloof from the activities of the body, he becomes free from the reactions as well. As long as he's in the city of the body, he appears to be the master of it, but actually he is neither its proprietor nor controller of its actions and reactions. He is simply in the midst of the material ocean, struggling for existence. The waves of the ocean are tossing him, and he has no control over them. His best solution is to get out of the water by transcendental Krishna consciousness. That alone will save him from all turmoil. Om Agyana Timiram Tasya Panandaya Salakaya Chakshur Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurudev Namah Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhistam Sthapitam Jena Bhutale Svayam rupa kada mayam tathati shapadantikam. Bande hang shri guru shri jata padakamalang. Shri gurun vaishnavamscha. Shri rupam shagrashatam. Sahagana raganatan vitam stam sidivam. Sadvaitam sabatutam. Parishana sahitam krishna chaitanya devam. Sri Radha Krishna Padan, Shahagana Lalita, Sri Vishakhan Vitanstra. He Krishna Karuna Sindho, Deen Bandho Jagatate, Gopesha Gopika Kanta, Radha Kanta Namostute. Tapta Kam Shana Gaurangi, Radhe Vrindavaneshari, Vrishabhanu Sute Devi, Pranamami Hari Priye. Vansha kopatarubhyascha kripa sindho bhyevacha patita nam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namo. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivash Adigaur Bhaktavinda. Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Nakartritvam.
Nakarmani. Lokasya Sridhati Prabhu. Na karma pala sang yogam svabhavas tu pravartate. We're not what we think we are. We're thinking that we're doing things, that we are in control, that we're influencing others, winning them over, or in some way having an impact, that by our work some results are coming, that we're the doers of so many things. And Krishna says, not so. Asango hiyam purushaha. The Vedic statement is that the living being has nothing to do with material nature. Asanga means he's not even, no connection with it. Not, we're not connected with material nature. Asanga hiyam purushaha. Then how is it that we appear to be connected? That's called illusion. And the Bhagavatam gives several examples. One example is that you look up in the sky and you see sometimes the moon is like shooting across the sky. Have you seen that? Sometimes the moon is just racing across the sky. So it seems that the moon is doing that. But it's actually because of the background of the clouds, which are being pushed around by the wind. So the moon is pretty much where it is, but it seems to be racing across the sky because the clouds are moving. The moon has no connection with that. Or another example is that the sun or the moon is shining on the water, and the water appears to be shaking. The water is shaking, and so the moon or the sun seems to be shaking. You see the moon or sun reflected, and they're breaking up. So it's not that the sun or moon is breaking up, but we're seeing the reflection and imagining that we're seeing the sun or the moon. Or our situation in the material world has been compared to that of a person who sees his head cut off in a dream. You have a dream and you see your head being severed from your body. So that's a terrible dream. And but if you think about it, if you can see your head, then you must be okay. Hare Krishna. I'm seeing my head being cut off. That means I'm someplace else. And my head is okay. But I'm seeing it, and so I'm in tremendous fear. So in the same way, we're seeing all these material activities, and we're imagining, now I'm getting old, now I'm dying, now I'm making money, now I'm losing money, now this is happening, now that's happening. All these great and small dramas. But what does this have to do with me? It's like a dream. In a dream, I'm making money or losing money. I had some dream the other day. What was it? I've forgotten. Some dream that was something had to happen and it wasn't happening, or whatever it was. And so it was the source of some anxiety. But then when I woke up, there was nothing. Sometimes I have a dream, maybe this was one of those dreams where I'm trying to catch a plane and I'm late, or, oh yeah, I didn't ask you to turn off your cell phones, please. Cell phone check. All the cell phones, not just the one that's ringing, but all of them can be kindly tamed. Slowly pull it out of your pocket, and that's right. Some dream I had to get somewhere and I had to be done, and I had to, whether it was catching a plane or telling the devotees something, I couldn't do it and I couldn't do it, and it was so much anxiety. And then I woke up and there wasn't a problem anymore. So our situation is like that, that we have so many problems or so many accomplishments, but what does that actually have to do with me? This is just our present dreaming condition. Prabhupada said night dream and day dream. When we're sleeping, we're having one dream, and when we're awake, we're having another dream. Okay, this is not my actual position, that I'm CEO, or I'm the garbage collector, or I'm this, or I'm that. I'm none of these things, because I'm not this body, because I'm not a part of this material world, because I'm nothing to do really with the material energy. But I'm imagining. I'm imagining that I have something to do with karmapala, with the things that are, again, why am I I'm imagining that I can enjoy here. That's the driving principle of it. And so there are some things I like because they give me some enjoyment. Other things that I abhor because they get in the way of my enjoyment. So I try to get the good things and avoid the bad things, and that's the story of my life. But they're neither good nor bad because none of them are substantial. The good things are not substantial, and the bad things are also not substantial. Neither of them has substantial existence. So our real business is, our real identity is that we're spiritual souls. We're parts and parcels of Krishna, and our business is to be situated in Krishna consciousness. When we reawaken that consciousness, then we're situated in awakened life, in real life. Otherwise, all these things are going on in a dreaming state. We're associated with material nature, Prabhupada says, since time immemorial, somehow or other. That's Prabhupada's typical take on all the controversies of where are we from. Somehow or other, here we are, and we're in trouble. That much is very clear. Because we're in touch with the material nature, and we're in touch with it because we want to be in touch with it. We're voluntarily marching forward to entangle ourselves with material nature, with the idea that we'll get the better part of the deal. And material nature is set up in such a way that we never get a better deal. Material means already inferior or illusory or temporary. So, you know, the better deal or the worst deal, they're all bad deals. But we're thinking, I'm going to get a good deal. I guess it's something like imagining how much money you're going to get on one of those Nigerian schemes.
So if we're in Krishna consciousness and we've become aloof from the activities of the body, then what do we do? Do we just lay in bed all day? And you know, why bother doing anything? Or why bother being involved in anything?
There are those who reach that stage where there's nothing for me to do. They really don't do anything. The Python man doesn't do anything. He just, why should I do anything? He has that vision, not that he's in the mode of ignorance and he's lazy, but he just sees that, well, everything's going on. I don't even have to work for food because according to karma, a certain amount of food will come regardless. So he does absolutely nothing. But that's not the path that Krishna recommends for the ordinary person. We should act, but we should see who's actually acting. We should act means that we volunteer to be instrumental for Krishna. Nimitta matra bhavasavya sachin. You just be instrumental. That means Krishna's acting, but he's acting through me. How is he acting through me? We give him the opportunity to do that. We cooperate. He has the opportunity anyway. He could force us, but he doesn't do that. So we come forward and say, Karishyeva chanam tava. I'll do what you say. You give the order, I'll carry it out. So that means I'm not really doing anything except cooperating. I'm agreeing. I'm agreeing. There are five factors for the accomplishment of any action. Adhisthanam tata karta karanam cha pratag vidha vividhascha pratag cheshta daiva cha vatra panchama. The body, the so-called doer, the senses, the different kinds of endeavor, and ultimately the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We always want to cut out that last one and say, yeah, I was in the right place at the right time and I put out the extra effort and I won. But you could have been in the right place at the right time and put out the extra effort, and if Krishna didn't so desire, you would have gotten nothing. So finally, it's up to Krishna. And sometimes that happens. You know, a company, they make exactly the right plan. Their execution is flawless. Everything's right. And their competitor comes out with the product 3 days before them. It's not in their control. It's not in their control. Or there was one company, they make breath mints. And they were like the household name in breath mints. And they were building up their business and they had, you know, brand recognition. And then someone decided to call the HIV disease AIDS, which was the name of their mint. And that's all, that's it. That's it. There's nothing you can do now. It's finished. So things are not in our hands, even when we're imagining that they are. Everything's finally in the hands of Krishna. Or even Krishna doesn't bother with this stuff. Prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvasya. He delegates this to the material nature. You handle this. I've got my spiritual world. I like it there, and I'll get involved in everything there. You handle the business there, down in the material world. I don't want to get my hands dirty with this stuff. Mayad yakshena, I'll be the overseer, but you do the actual work. You know, God doesn't have to get involved in all the details of this sordid material world. He delegates material nature, and everything's actually done. Prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani. It's actually done by the modes of material nature. And ahankara vimudhatma kartaham iti manyate. We're so foolish that we're imagining, I did it. But things go the way they're going to go, with or without us. Just Krishna told Arjuna, everyone here at Kurukshetra is already dead. I've already decided that they're going to die. Now, if you like, you can cooperate and be the instrument for killing them. But otherwise, they'll be killed anyway. And you'll fight anyway, just someplace else. So your only choice is cooperate or not cooperate, but you can't decide who's going to live, who's going to die. It's not within your power.
Maharaj, it is said that Krishna doesn't get directly involved with material nature, and yet it is said that he awards the fruits of one's action, which is involvement in the material nature.
Indirectly.
Okay.
He doesn't personally get involved in that stuff. He awards it means his agent. So like when it said the state awards, it doesn't mean that the governor is personally awarding, you know, a $50 check for your unemployment or something. It's delegated several layers down and you get your check.
Maharaj, regarding the instrument, being the instrument of Krishna, so can you please elaborate? Because there in the war, Krishna was presently, you know, he was present there, and you know, Arjuna was there, and actually Krishna was driving the whole thing.
So instrument of Krishna means instrument of Krishna's representative. Arjuna had Krishna there personally, so when Krishna is not personally driving our chariot or giving us instructions, then his representative is there, the bona fide spiritual master. the instructions of the bona fide spiritual master are taken to be as good as Krishna's instructions. Yes.
Maharaj, is it true that we have to suffer or when we have to suffer in this material world as long as we have the desire to enjoy the fruits of our action?
Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm. Because why am I associated with material? Like, why does some man become associated with some woman? Yeah, they have no relationship. She's, you know, she's a girl and he sees her someplace. How does the relationship, what makes the relationship go? Why does he get involved?
Out of maybe the pleasure that we'll get from that, out of the pleasure that we'll get.
Yeah, he's thinking that, wow, I'd like to get to know this girl because there's some pleasure down the line there. Hmm? He's thinking, otherwise he has nothing to do. You know, she can walk down the street and he never, you know, never even enters his life. So he has no connection. But he thinks, here's some enjoyment. So, hi, where are you from? Or whatever the opening line is going to be. I haven't seen you before. Or, anyway, write your own novel. But Kame Cho, or you know, whatever it's going to be. So there's no connection there. But because he's thinking to enjoy, the connection, he establishes a connection. And because he establishes that connection, now he has to accept whatever comes, which down the line he finds out, if the relationship goes somewhere, that it's very expensive, that there's all sorts of unexpected extras connected with the project. He thought, you know, I'll just say hello and I'm on my way to the road for enjoyment. He never thought, I'm on the road to working 8 hours a day. You know, where's money, and coming home and hearing about how this broke and that broke and this person treated me so badly and what are we going to do about this and when are we going to go on a vacation? We'd never spend any time together anymore because you're always working. The poor guy's working for her anyway, but we never spend any time together. And on and on and on and on. And then there's babies and the baby's sick and the doctor doesn't know what it is and he thinks that we have to run some more tests. And it's going to cost, it's going to cost a little bit of money. And then, and on and on and on and on. And this was just going to be an enjoyment program. But he's now is responsible for the car payments, the house payments, the doctor bills, the insurance, the medical, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, along with the psychological maintenance and the suspicions that she's made. This guy down the block seems to be spending an awful lot of time with her, and so all of that. He's become associated with all of that because he wanted to enjoy. How does the fish become associated with the hook? What would any fish in his right mind want to be connected to a hook for? But because there's some bait and he sees some enjoyment, he voluntarily comes forward to enjoy. And then he's caught. So as long as we're desiring, let me enjoy this material nature, we have to associate with material nature. You can't enjoy what you don't associate with. So we're thinking, there's something here that I can enjoy, and therefore I'm. What do they say? Put your hand to the wheel or something like that. Some expression. Maybe you put your energy into it. Otherwise, we have nothing to do with this world. Shoulder to the wheel. Putting our shoulder to the wheel because we think that there's something that's going to come out of it. Otherwise, if we think this material world is a lost cause, there's no enjoyment here, nothing here of interest, useless place, then it's going to be another story. We're not going to be looking toward how can I renew my subscription. It's, you know, can I end my subscription early and get my money back? So that's the position. As long as we're thinking, let me enjoy, and we have to come back here and enjoy. The Karmakandiya people, they're, Prabhupada mentioned, Ishopanishad, they're aspiring to go to the heavenly planets. They're performing sacrifices or charitable acts or what have you, so they can be elevated to the Svarg, to the heavenly planets. So two things can happen. Either they fail or they succeed. If they fail, then they stay down here. And if they succeed, they go there. And that means continuing in birth and death, because there is still part of this material world. So either way, they're losers. If they lose, they're losers, and if they win, they're losers. The actual winning position is to get out of the game. To say I don't want anything in this material world. This kinshana, what is there for me? I want to serve Krishna. I want to be in the spiritual world, not here. Then he's free. How is that possible? By developing his desire to serve Krishna. Otherwise, the material world is put together in such a way that it seems awfully nice. And just to say, no, is going to be very difficult. Because Maya is going to say, yes. We'll say, I don't want it. And she'll say, yes, you do. Come on. So it's only possible to give up if we have a higher engagement, if we're engaged in the devotional service of Krishna and feeling pleasure in the service of Krishna. Then we'll say, what is this? You expect me? Yes, you do. Oh, no, I don't. I've got something better. Is that okay?
Thank you, Maharaj.
Yes.
Maharaj, the other side of that answer, so we cannot avoid the material the result either, right? Because we are the material.
A little slower, please.
I was a little concerned that we cannot avoid all this material result of this Maya creating, because we are in the material world, in the material body.
But we leave it up to Krishna. The result is not for my enjoyment. The result is for Krishna's service. And if there's no result, well, then I don't have a problem. But if there's some profit, that's for Krishna, not for my enjoyment, because I'm not going to be able to enjoy. It's not my business to enjoy. Is that okay? It's not just giving up. I was at some program, there was an Indian cultural center or something being set up in Gainesville, Florida, and near the University of Florida. And a few of us were invited to attend. And so they had a typical engagement. They had a Muslim Indian boy speak and a Christian Indian boy speak and a Hindu Indian boy speak, maybe a Sikh, at least those three. And everybody spoke a little something. And the Hindu boy was so confused. He was the most confused of all of them. He was a PhD student in engineering or something. And he was explaining Karmanye Vadikaraste, I think that's what it is, Ma Paleshu Kadachana, how you should just not be interested in the results. But he was tripping all over his shoelaces trying to explain how you work without caring about the result. Now, here he is, a PhD student. You can be pretty darn sure that he cares a lot about the results. You know, he's not spending all that money and working all those hours because he doesn't care about the results. So he couldn't explain it cogently, rationally, sensibly, because he was leaving out Krishna. that we do care about the result, but the result is for offering to Krishna. And the result may or may not come, that's also up to Krishna. But my job is to do my duty and think of Krishna, offer the result to Krishna, depend on Krishna. That's my business. Not to somehow or other get the result and then say, oh, I don't care about this result. That's stupid. But to offer the result to Krishna. Manasa deha geha yo kichumur apilutu apade nanda kishwari. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, my mind, my body, my home, whatever I have, I offer to you, Nanda Kishwari. Is that okay? Something else? We go till when?
Eight.
We have half hour. Okay.
Just always had this thought in my mind, so I just wanted to ask you about. In the one of the important verses of Srimad Bhagavatam, second chapter, it says that Vidyate Hridaya Granthi Chidyante Sarva Samshaya Drishta Evatman Ishware. So Prabhupada actually, in the Prabhupada actual translation of that verse,
sees the self as master.
Yeah, so I was. Because in the purport to that verse, Prabhupada does not explain explicitly that point. So
Ishra,
how do
we... Atman Ishra. The soul is supposed to be the master of... Just here we see the master of the body. He's not supposed to be controlled by the senses. He's not supposed to be subservient to the modes of material nature. Control means that he... dedicates himself to Krishna. He doesn't control independently. He's not an independent controller. But he's the controller by surrendering to the supreme controller. Then he's in control. He's not meant to be a das of this material nature, dragged around by his senses, banged around by the modes of material nature. He's meant to be liberated from, and then he becomes master. How does he become master? But just like spiritual master. How does one become a spiritual master? By being servant. If he thinks that he's master, then he's finished. But if he thinks that he's servant, then he can serve his master. The servant of Krishna becomes the master. Yes.
Sometimes we know people who thought...
Actually, I'm going to interrupt you by just... No, I'm not going to interrupt you. Go ahead.
You say, I'm convinced of this philosophy and I want to move into the temple, go out on Harinam Sankirtan all day long and go through the morning and evening program every day and follow this whole program. And then we know people who then later in their life, they feel like, I don't have enough money, I don't have enough security to comfortably retire, I haven't looked out for certain kinds of needs that I'm going to have later, and that they're sometimes even regret. So what can you say about that? And
they don't realize what their assets are. They've got this asset of spiritual credit, but they're thinking that I'm missing something important. You ever see those cartoons? I'm sure you did. When we were kids, you'd see these cartoons, and somebody's running, and somebody else is running behind them. And they run, and they run, and they run. The character runs and runs and runs, and then he runs right off past the cliff, and he keeps running and running and running, and then he looks down. And as long as he was running, it was fine. It's only when he looks down and thinks, oh, and then he crashes. So as long as we stick to Krishna consciousness, we can just keep running. As soon as we forget Krishna, then down. Then it's like, oh, what about my security? There's no security in the material world anyway. But you think, what about my security? What about this? What about that? I lost so many years of my life, blah, 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 blah. That means he's under the influence of illusion. Otherwise, as long as his consciousness was clear, what is the problem? Krishna will take care of me. And if he doesn't take care of me, I'll die. Well, I'm going to die anyway.
It takes a lot of determination, though. If it seems like he doesn't...
It takes keeping your head screwed on, right? Keeping the philosophy in the forefront, chanting Hare Krishna, sticking, keep running, basically. As long as you're running, you're okay.
Your relatives will say, why were you such a fool? You didn't... Your brother, look at your brother. He's retired, and now he's living in Palm Beach with a big house.
I look at my brother, or I don't have a brother, but I look at my relatives, and I say, Hare Krishna, thank you so much. The people I grew up with when I was kids, now they have like pot bellies, and they're you see them at some social event, and their wife is kind of like an old lady. And the kids are like typical rebellious teenagers and, trouble. And he's got a job that been going to every day for the last, 40 years. And, it's like, would I want to be there? Yeah, okay, he's got an insurance policy. And he's got a, cell phone check, please. All the cell phones should be off. He's got so-called security. But when death comes, death doesn't care about his insurance policy. And he has no insurance policy for the next life. He doesn't know where he's going to go. He's in ignorance. He has no idea even that there is a next life, what to speak of where he's going to go. He had no idea what to do and what not to do in this life. So his credit is pretty bad. That is to say, he has lots of debits for sinful activities. So he thinks everything's secure, but then it all tumbles. Disease comes, old age comes, death comes, and then finally everything's taken away, and then he's thrown into the next place. I wouldn't want to change position with him. For what? An insurance policy? And what? Just go with it. If you made a mistake and you gave up, all the material comforts and everything, just stick with your mistake. See it through to the end, and you'll be fine. But no, I want to switch. Doesn't make sense. You've taken this path, stick with it. You'll be happy. If you want to go, reverse, at the age of 60, you realize you always wanted to be a doctor, that's stupid. That's stupid. Like I have a cousin. He's a pediatrician, does very well. But his wife says he missed his real vocation, which would have been gardening. That would have been gardening. He really likes gardening. But anyway, it's too late for him to go back and say, well, I'm going to become a gardener. He's a pediatrician. Stick with being a pediatrician. Everything has its advantages and disadvantages. If you were a gardener, that has problems too. So renunciation and enjoyment both have problems. But in fact, the enjoyment has greater problems than renunciation. And the worst is taking renunciation and then thinking about everything you missed and going back for enjoyment. Now you're 62. What are you going to enjoy? Forget it. You came this far. Just go it the rest of the way and be happy. And you'll be very happy. You've taken the fortunate path. Don't give it up. Otherwise, you give up the path of good fortune to take up the path of misfortune and then complain that you're not properly equipped for it. That's the rule of renunciation. Don't regret.
Maharaj, it is explained that that a living entity, he goes into renunciation, then he comes back and enjoys. So this kind of, so this cycle is going, this back and forth is going on. So how does he come out of it?
By devotional service. Because the bhoga is bogus. And I don't have a catchy line for what tyaga is, but the tyaga is also bogus. It's false enjoyment, because he's not the enjoyer, and these things are not his to enjoy, and it's not going to work. And it's false renunciation, because you're renouncing something that was never yours to begin with. Perhaps that I renounce this Bank of America. You know, when was it yours? So they're both false platforms, the platform of boga and the platform of tyag. Real platform is the platform of devotional service. And automatically, your enjoyment, whatever it is, will be there from Krishna consciousness, and automatically you'll be detached from material activities. Something else? There's an entirely different way of looking at this verse, by the way, which some of the Vaishnava commentators have given. Lokasya Srijati Prabhu. Here, Prabhu is the master of the city of the body. It's also possible to take Prabhu as meaning the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In that case, the Supreme Personality of Godhead isn't doing anything in this material world. Natasya karyam karanam cha vidyate. He has nothing to do. He doesn't create anything. He's never connected with the fruits of activities. It's all going on by the modes of material nature. Prakrite kriyamanani. The Lord has no connection with these things. He's distant. So you can't blame him. You know, if you don't like the way things are turning out, it's not Krishna. He's not even connected with these things, except as the distant overseer. But we're acting in such a way that good or bad results will come. The example is given of the rain. Some trees are producing mangoes and some are producing lemons, or some are producing sweet fruits and some sour fruits. Some tree is producing mangoes, some tree is producing neem. But that's not because of the rain. The rain doesn't say, I'm going to make this, you know, a sweet pear tree, and I'm going to make this a bitter neem tree. The rain is the same. It doesn't get involved in these things. But it's according to, you know, what you are. Well, if you're a neem tree, you're going to grow bitter leaves. If you're a mango tree, you're going to grow mangoes. So the living entity, according to his desires, according to the body he's received, according to his activities, things go on. And then he blames God. You know, why did God do this? Why did God? No, God is aloof. He doesn't create all of these things. We create them. Something else. Yes.
It is also stated in Bhagavad Gita that Sangha Sanjayate Kama.
Start again. It's also said in Bhagavad Gita
that Sangha Sanjayate Kama, that by association one, you know, develops the desire to enjoy. And our enjoyment also, if we enjoy something, then it also puts another seed of, you know.
Yeah, therefore we have to change our association. If we associate with those who are interested in material enjoyment, or if we associate with things for our enjoyment, then our desires will grow. And if we associate with Krishna, a different desire will grow. Or if we associate with Krishna's devotees. If we associate with devotees, then the desire grows to serve Krishna. If we associate with non-devotees, the desire grows to enjoy Maya. If you go to the casino, what kind of desires are going to grow? And if you go to the temple, a different desire will grow. So it's up to us to mold our association in such a way that our desire for Krishna consciousness will increase. Something else.
Mm-hmm.
Maharaj, in Bhagavad Gita, many times it is mentioned that like senses are compared to serpents. So, and on the other hand, we understand that senses are dead, like matter. So how, why they are personified? And how do we understand that?
Well, personification involves drama and comparison. We personify something, like we personify Uncle Sam. There's no Uncle Sam, but it allows us to understand something about the government, either that he's putting his hand in our pockets and or else that he's protecting us from the enemy or whatever it is. But he's personified so that we can get the picture. When I was growing up as a kid, there was a campaign, Our Friend the Atom. They wanted to promote the development of so-called peaceful nuclear energy, so they personified the little atom. He was our friend, and he was our friend the atom. You know, he's like a really good guy. He did so much for us. We're still trying to clean up after our friend the atom, but that's another story. Anyway, it's personified. So when we want to dramatize or clarify the position of something, so that we use this technique of personification. So the senses are personified or compared to serpents because serpents are dangerous. They're mean, they're poisonous. You really have to watch out for them, otherwise you could die. So the senses are just like, you know, inert things. I mean, a tongue is just a little piece of flesh this big. So you know, what is that? It's just sort of a clinical fact. It's got this much blood in it. It's got this much flesh. It weighs XYZ. It's got these muscles in it. No big thing. But to dramatize the trouble that this tongue can get us into, it's compared to a serpent. So the tongue can ruin our life. You know, the person who's if you're working for the military and you start saying everything that you know, you could be in serious trouble. Or in so many ways, we say the wrong things. We don't control our tongue. Or just in ordinary affairs, we're just talking about Maya, and so we become the associates of Maya instead of using the tongue to chant Hare Krishna and speak about Krishna. Or the tasting function. We're tasting all rubbish and getting entangled, or we're tasting Krishna prasadam. So the uncontrolled senses are like serpents. That means very dangerous. We shouldn't think, oh, the senses, eh. It's to dramatize. No, the senses are really serious trouble if they're uncontrolled, like serpents. And then from another point of view, Duradan Tendriya Karpas Kala Sarpa Patali Gitai, what is that? Danstrayate. Again, it's is that Prabodhananda Saraswati?
Yes.
Durdan Dendriya. The senses which are compared to serpents, if one just gets a sidelong glance from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then those senses become like the serpent with broken fangs. You know, they pull the fangs out of the serpent. He's like, looks tough, but he's nothing. You see these kids like by India Gate or something, you know, and they've got a cobra. You know, the cobra has no teeth. So he looks scary, but it's all bluff. So the serpent-like senses, which are so dangerous, for a person who's gotten just a little mercy from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, become like serpents with broken fangs. No problem. Vedic literature is poetic also. So it uses all of these literary devices to give us spiritual realization.
Page 414, I just wanted.
Page 414.
Of the Shloka book, Maharaj.
In the Shloka book, page 414. Oh, that's Duryodhanendriya Karma Kalasarpati. 414. Yeah. Kaivalyam Nadakayate. That's, we discussed earlier, how the impersonal liberation is worse than hell. Tridashapur Akasha Pushpayate. The Tridashapur means the cities of the demigods. People, you're hearing, what is that? Yam Imam Pushpitam Vacham. The Vedas are full of hymns about how, woo, 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 you know, heaven is going to be like heavenly. And you, the beautiful girls, the beautiful gardens, the endless lifetime that you have, and just the strong senses and the standard of sense enjoyment. But for a person who gets the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Akasha Pushpayate, it becomes like flowers in the sky. Akasha Pushpa means a figment of the imagination. And in Bengali, it's also called horse's eggs. Horse's eggs, flowers in the sky, it means imagination. Duryodhanendriya Kala Sarpa Patali Prokata Dangstrayate. And for the yogis, the senses are very problematic, but for the person who's gotten the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they're like, as described, broken, fanged serpent. Vishvam Purnam Sukhayat, Purna Sukhayate. The whole world becomes a happy place for him, full of happiness. Although Dukkhalayam, it's described in the material in Bhagavad Gita as Dukkhalayam, miserable place. But for a devotee, it becomes a happy place because he's not part of this material world. And Vidhi Mahendradis Chakitayate. And the demigods, beginning with Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, become as important as insects. All the materialists are after the standard of Brahma, or they're praying to, Hiranyakashipu is praying to Lord Brahma. They want to be like Indra. But they're like bugs for the devotee. Yat karunya kataksha vaibhavavatam tam gauram eva stumaha. For a person who's gotten a small glance, what is that? Kataksha. Kataksha means like a sidelong glance. Karunya kataksha, the merciful glance of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Is there a question for 7 minutes? Yes.
On the topic of the senses, so during the dream, obviously the external senses are not active. So does it mean that the subtle body also has senses? Like the mind, subtle body consisting of mind, intelligence, and false ego.
Mind has imaginary senses. The whole picture, the whole dream is manufactured by the mind. In the dream, I have senses. I'm a king. I have a throne. I have a palace. I have a queen. I've got whatever it is that I have. Where does all that exist? It exists in the mind. It's all existing in the mind. The mind has all of these things. It creates all of these things. Even this body is a creation of the mind. Arashchayam, what is that? Manaschayam upasevate. Shrotrasparshu, chakshusparshu, mevacha, arashchayam, manaschayam. Vishayan upasevate. This body is a result of the mind. I was thinking about enjoying in a certain way, and that mentality has attracted, as it were, a certain set of senses. That is to say, I've gotten another body grouped around the mind. not just whatever I'm thinking of, but whatever I deserve combined with whatever I'm thinking of gives me this body. So it's all, this body is also a product of the mind. And it's also my association with this body, my identification with this body, is another mental concoction, sankalpa, pramaman, kama. So it's all in the mind.
So the ghosts who don't have this gross body, they can. It is said that they cannot. They have all these desires, but they cannot enjoy because they don't have these gross senses.
Yeah.
But in the dream, we seem to have. You know, we also enjoy and we also suffer. And
yeah, but the dream is not. How long does the dream last? And it's not very satisfying. Well, maybe ghosts can dream also, but then they wake up and they don't have gross senses. Of course, we also, we're dreaming that we have whatever it is that we have while we're awake. But that dream is going to come to an end also, and we're going to be frustrated. Therefore, we're like ghosts also. You know, we're looking and say, oh, the ghosts, they, you know, they don't have anything. But we're the ghosts. We're haunted by Maya, and we're speaking all nonsense. And we're getting a little something, which is all going to be taken away in a moment. And we're ghosts also. This body is a ghostly body compared to the spiritual body.
Thank you, Maharaj.
So if you renounce everything and not go through like life, like the guy meeting the girl and whatever, going through whatever and then having baby troubles, then what is the point of life?
The point of life is to get out of this material world and be re-engaged in the service of Krishna. The point of life is not getting married and having babies and paying the doctor bills and sending the kid to college, and that's not life. That's not actually, the animals do that also. The animals have kids, they pair up, have sex, have kids, eat, sleep, fend off enemies and threats, and die. So what is the point of that? How significant is the life of a mosquito? That's what the mosquitoes do. They get married, they have sex, they have little baby mosquitoes, they keep out of the way of spider webs and stuff like that as far as possible. Try not to get, while they're, when they're eating, they try not to avoid the slaps. And then finally, they, some slap or other they don't avoid and they die. Now, how significant was the life of that mosquito? Now, that's our life. We eat, we sleep, we have some sex, we protect ourselves from threats, and then we die. That means that our life is of no significance as long as we're disconnected from Krishna. It's meaningless. We're ascribing great meaning to it. I built a house. I got married, I take care of my family, da-da-da-da-da. You know, the goat does that, the dog does that, the mosquito does that. What's the big deal? So it's meaningless. As long as we're not connected with Krishna, it has no meaning. Because meaning or reality, Krishna is the supreme reality. If you're, when we're disconnected from Krishna, whatever we're connected with is unreal. Krishna is the supreme substance. If we're not connected to Krishna, it's insubstantial. Again, whatever I accomplish in a dream, what is the meaning of that? It has no, nothing. Yata bhasham yata tamaha. It has nothing, no substantial existence. Because we have this body, we'll do these things. We'll eat, we'll sleep, we'll mate, we'll defend. But disconnected from Krishna, it's meaningless. When we are connected with Krishna, then those things have some meaning. Then, you know, I get married and we serve Krishna. We have some children and we engage them in the service of Krishna. We eat and we think of Krishna, what we offer to Krishna. When it's connected to Krishna, it has meaning. Disconnected from Krishna, meaning. Prabhupada gave the example. You have zero. Disconnected from one, it's nothing. Connected with one, it's 10. 100 zeros is however many that is, with the one in front of it. Otherwise, it's just 0, 0, 0. Everything's meaningless without Krishna. And with Krishna, everything has meaning. Even like sweeping the floor, you know, so what? Nobody's going to write a book about it. He swept the floor. You know, in 1842, he picked up a broom and swept the floor. But if you're engaged in the service of Krishna, sweeping the floor is something very significant. You're making progress on the path back to Godhead. Yeah.
Well, isn't it believed that like first 30 years of the life, you devote to yourself, your growth? Because if we are successful, if we are self-sufficient, we can help others. After 30 years, you help your family for 20 years or 10 years maybe. So you stabilize your family, you do your responsibilities. And after you have helped your family, you can say leave the materialistic world and then help the people. Those are not related to you, the people who are not related to you. Devote your service to the people, you know, without any favor. Just selflessly give the world what they have given you for the last 40 years. So return back the good things. And after you are satisfied with doing things for the world, helping people without expecting anything from them, then you connect to God. And, you know, meditate and be attached to him and, you know.
Well, there's something quite similar to the Vedic idea there. The Vedic idea, it's not 30-30-30, but it's similar.
Yeah, just for example.
Similar,
yeah.
That first years of your life are for your own development. Then the next, say, 25 years, we're at 25 instead of 30, but 25 years of married life and so on. Then the next 25 or next 50 years, really, are detachment and dedication to service. So that's there. But the difference is that we can't put off service to God till the last point, because doing your math, you had 30 years of dedicated to yourself, 30 years dedicated to your family, 30 years dedicated to public service, and you're 90. And now at the age of 90, you're going to do something to connect to God. Well, the chances of reaching 90 are not all that terrific. And the chances of reaching 90 all in one piece are still worse. If we reach 90 and we have all our marbles together, as they say, if we're not senile or physically falling apart, then we're members of a very privileged small group of people. So if we wait to do the most important thing in the stage when we're first of all, not even statistically likely to reach, and where we're most likely to be falling apart anyway, then that's problematic. So the Vedic plan is that at every stage we should cultivate devotional service to Krishna. Self-development, the first 30 years, actually means that. It doesn't mean, you know, I watch as many movies as possible and play as many games and attend as many sports events. It means that I actually learn how to develop my relationship with Krishna. That's the best self-sufficiency or self-investment. Then, in the next 25 years, when I'm married, now I have something to give my wife or give my family. Otherwise, I'm empty. You know, I don't really know who I am. I don't know what life is for. I spent 30 years playing video games, but I don't know more than that. So now, because I've cultivated Krishna consciousness in those first, say, 25 years, now the next 25 years, I have something to give my family. And so the children have something, you know, to carry to the next generation and so on. And now it's possible to move on to, say, public service because I have something to give the public. Otherwise, what do I have to give them? I worked like an ass for 25 years, and I'll teach you how to work like an ass for, you know, for the rest of your life also. That's not really public service. Public service is how people can become enlightened, how they can become free from birth and death, how they can have meaning in their lives. That's the real public service. So if we've cultivated that from the beginning, by the time we're ready to retire from family life, we have something extremely valuable to give. Plus, we're not dead yet, and we're still a little bit together. And if we didn't reach that stage, if we only got to, say, 20 or 30 or 40, which happens to a lot of people, so it's no loss because we didn't put the most important business till after it's no longer possible. We've kept it going.
Yeah, that's what I meant. It's just a figure, not exactly, you know.
Because, if you meant what I meant, then we're happy.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like goes.
I always
side
love it when
side.
People mean the same thing that I mean. It's fantastic.
It's like everything should go side by side, you
yes.
know?
Yes. Side
materialistic
by side.
Life and religion.
Yeah.
So.
But not exactly materialistic life and religion, but the material necessities. If we get too gaga over materialistic life, too absorbed, too preoccupied, which can easily happen, then the spiritual part starts to disappear. The art is to learn how actually to have a life where even the material part becomes spiritual. So there is no material part. Even the part that looks material is so connected with Krishna that it's spiritual. Usually taking care of kids and family, that's not spiritual. But if we're connected with Krishna, that's spiritual. Working, that's not very spiritual. But if I'm doing it for Krishna, that's also spiritual. So the art is how to connect it all with Krishna so that it's all spiritual. Okay? Good. Thank you all very much. All glories to Shri Krishna.